Hello and welcome to Tales of the Resistance, a podcast about antimicrobial resistance. On today's show, as always, we are joined by a rotating lineup of members of the I Am Responsible Project, a nationwide team of educators and researchers working on solutions to AMR. I'm Amber, your host for today, and I'm joined by Mara.
Hey guys.
And Beth.
Hey everybody.
On today's show, we're talking about news discoveries in the world of AMR. Let's get started. So the article that I found was called Researchers Discover New Forms of Antimicrobial Resistance, and it research was done by Rodrigo et al. In 2022 and can be found in Nature Communications. There's a link in the show notes if you'd like to take a look at it. An Australian team led by Dr. Timothy Barnett revealed a new mechanism that enables bacteria to take up nutrients from their human hosts and bypass antibiotic treatment. And I'd like to share a quote from the article because it explains the mechanism much better than I possibly could. So it says, bacteria need to make their own folates to grow and in turn cause disease. Some antibiotics work by blocking this folate production to stop bacteria growing and treat the infection. We found, the researchers, a mechanism of resistance where for the first time ever, the bacteria demonstrated the ability to take folates directly from its human host when blocked from producing their own. This makes the antibiotic ineffective and the infection would likely worsen when the patient should be getting better. So this new form of resistance is undetectable under conditions routinely used in pathology laboratories, making it very hard for clinicians to prescribe antibiotics that would effectively treat the infection. So, of course, that could lead to severe illness and even premature death. I found this article fascinating because we already know about many of the mechanisms of antibiotic resistance, but this is the first time that we're looking at it in terms of blocking the folate production. I just thought, okay, well, here's another layer to the complexity of what AMR is. And the research team also talks about the complexity of it. So they also spend a lot of time talking about what can we do to combat it and what is our role in all of this, which I thought was fascinating. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the article.
Yeah, this was really interesting, Amber. I'm glad you found this and brought this to our discussion. I was reading through this and it's kind of interesting because we do know a lot about the mechanisms that bacteria use to sort of resist antibiotics, but this was the first time that I had read basically that they had discovered a new mechanism for this resistance. Now, it's hard to say whether how new the mechanism is in terms of, oh, is this a brand new mutation that's just coming into the population and spreading around? Or has it been there a while and we just didn't know to look for it? You know, there's always that, there's a balance of, well, you can only know through science, you can only discover what you know to look for. And sometimes something is there and you just don't know it yet. So I'm not sure that 100% is clear, because one of the things they talked about in the article was basically the application of this combination of drugs that they were using in this study. They are used mostly for patients who already have MRSA. So you're in a situation where there was already a resistant infection. And then they tried to use this multi-drug combination to target this different mechanism, this folate production, like Amber was saying. And then they found this new resistance. So we're looking at a pretty small sample size, probably, for this application, but also a pretty serious situation where you've already got a resistant infection. So at least that was an interesting takeaway for me when I was reading through the article, was the fact that this was second layer resistance, compounding the problem. But yeah, and it, as you say, Amber, it is leading to, it just adds to our complexity. We feel like we're just adding more and more problems. We're not really coming up with solutions per se, except that, oh my gosh, antimicrobial resistance is a really big deal. We all need to be taking this seriously. But is that a solution? I mean, I don't know that we have a solution for this problem. We're just discovering a new problem. But I think on that stage, one of the things we do know, and we've talked about this in the podcast before, is that we're not going to eliminate antimicrobial resistance. They are going to mutate and develop new resistances. So the fact that this is a first time we've talked about this or read this kind of article where they actually discovered a new resistance, that's new for us, but it shouldn't be new in the lifespan of antibiotics and resistance. This is going to occur. It's just a balance of how quickly it occurs relative to how quickly we're able to develop alternative treatments. So expected, but an interesting point in our personal understanding of AMR that this is the first time we've read this kind of thing. So,
and this research kind of raises the question, is this mechanism possible in other bacterial pathogens? So I guess if anything, an optimistic take on the article is that they're now putting a spotlight on needing to research and understand the mechanisms that bacteria use to become resistant to antibiotics. So they can move forward in that direction doing that research. And it's not like that research wasn't being done, but I think they're now understanding the importance of it more so. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of the things we can do moving forward. And like you said, we'll never fully eliminate AMR, but understanding it as best we can is a step forward at least.
Yeah. Every time that we develop a new mechanism to treat antibiotics, and so like this folate production thing, that was one thing we tried to target, they will eventually develop a resistance to that. And this is a first paper we're reading where they're talking about that, but whether it could appear in other types of species or whether it already is in other species, that's something that is going to require a lot more research. It's a kind of a sad state of affairs to always say at the end of these papers as well, we need to do more research. And but it's true, you know, there's just not enough information. But in the environmental AMR side and in agricultural side, we talk a lot about these sort of potential pathways, the ways we think that antimicrobial resistance could transfer between all of these antimicrobial uses in environmental, agricultural spaces, the use of heavy metals, and there's a potential to transfer. But we need a lot more research, a lot more data to fully understand what is the difference between potential and a certain probability of expectation. So, and that's mm-hmm. important, as we've said multiple times, because we do have limited resources. You know, I'm saying it on the one hand, we need a lot more research. And then on the other hand, we have limited resources. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag messaging there, but we will have limited resources to address the problem. And so you want to put those resources where they are most effective. But gosh, we don't really know. There's so many things we don't know about the potential to transfer between these different species, between different environmental pools and populations, between in humans. Like, what's your risk for transfer from your pet? What's your risk for transfer between if you have kids in school and, you know, mm-hmm. between parents and who have kids in the same school, I should say. Like, all of that stuff has to be mapped out. It requires research, and there is just not enough research. So that for us to be able to definitively say one way or the other, we absolutely know that this is the best approach to take. So we're sort of left in this situation where we're all here banging the drum that antimicrobial resistance is a really big deal. We're going to all need to take a role. And then what? What do we do? I think we have always said there are some things you know you can do. And a lot of those come into the box of prevention. How do you prevent yourself from getting sick? Because that, at least you know, will eliminate the issue of antimicrobial resistance. If you weren't sick to begin with, then whether the antibiotics worked or didn't work is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And then there are things that we can do to preserve the lifespan of the antibiotics we do have with stewardship. But a lot of the larger infrastructural community-wide we call interventions within the system to prevent transfer, to prevent resistance development, or even to reverse it. I mean, those are possibilities, but we don't have the research yet to say. We're kind of in a waiting game of let's do what we can to give ourselves more time while we're doing the research to find out what the next step is. I don't know that that's like a helpful or hopeful message, but I guess it's where we are right now.
Right. It kind of is what it is.
Yeah. So kind of going into something new, because I had a weird reaction to this, because I got excited about learning how there were different ways for microorganisms to evolve to survive. I guess I'm starting to nerd out over antimicrobial resistance. I just found it interesting because
convert, huh?
I guess so. I'm learning enough to know that, oh my gosh, this is interesting. Anyway, so why I found it so exciting was because thinking about how many times humanity has taken its cues from nature and learned how to use that for our own advantage. And it makes me think, you know, I wonder if some of these bacterial survival techniques might be able to help us cure diseases in the future as we learn how to use them. I mean, maybe here is the secret to the cure for cancer or something. I don't know. I just, you know, every time you learn something new about nature, there's always that opening, that possibility of us being able to use it ourselves. So
that's true. I mean, like, all of this for bacteria comes down to a lot that they have this supercharged mutation plus the horizontal gene transfer that they can do. And this illustrates the importance of genes, how powerful they are. No, a medicine, external controls, chemical controls, or supplements that you give, that you take, or no amount of like surgical intervention is ever going to be as powerful as teaching your cell to fix itself, which is the gene.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are all kinds of, do we want to do that? Are we, you know, there's ethical things involved with that, and in the a slippery slope, and how far do you go?
Right.
Genetic engineering and all of that stuff. I'm not saying that we will go to that point fully, but this survival mechanisms, the wide array outside of just antibiotic resistance, bacteria are able to survive in environments where there is no readily available what we would call food. Obviously, they're eating heavy metal, they're eating basically radioactive material. They don't have mouths, but you know, they're getting their energy from it. They are getting they're breathing, quote unquote, you know, they're respiring in places where there's no oxygen. They're living in cold environments, in hot environments, in boiling water, and in the Antarctic, they live in low pressure and high pressure. And they've done all of this through changing in their genes, because their genes teach them to create different proteins, to create different structures in their cell wall and all of this stuff. And it's all in the genes. And if you think about this in a human scale, what you could learn to survive every disease known ever to man. Now, as long as diseases are caused by things that can mutate, maybe you're always in a constant struggle of competing mutation. But there, it seems like what a vast and unexplored recess, you know, what mm-hmm. are the possibilities that seem so cool? I mean, not just for people, but genetic engineering is used pretty widely in agriculture. And the potential, and we have seen the huge potential to feed many more people with much less input, much less required water, much less required fertilizer, much less required other like chemical controls. For food animals, for much less required food, and all of that stuff through genetic engineering, and some of that is what you would call husbandry, because that kind of thing, that selection for specific traits has been done for time immemoria. But knowing why you're doing that is the genetic engineering part. It's not just these two animals seem to be doing better, like I'm giving them less feed and they're getting just as much meat. So I want to have a lot more animals like this. So I'm going to breed these two together. That farmers have been doing for a really long time. And the only difference now is that we can get in there and see, okay, this is the exact gene that's causing it. So we don't have to do this through necessarily through a generation by generation breeding program. But it does seem like genetics is such a huge and cool and exciting field, and I'm not in it, but as a non-member, I think it is a cool thing to observe. You're right about that.
One of the things the article talks about that, well, actually the researchers kind of advocate for, is the need to discover new antibiotics. And I found that interesting because, as we've discussed before, there's not a lot of motivation to create new antibiotics, but they were, you know, pretty steadfast in the fact that we need them in this fight against AMR. And, you know, I guess I'm not saying something that we haven't already talked about, but it's just the desire for researchers to spend more time creating new antibiotics. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, maybe for context for any of our listeners who are just joining us now, we have discussed this before, that there's the economic incentives for developing a new antibiotic are pretty low. And that has to do with the way we patent drugs, the way we require clinical trials for them, there's the very high startup cost to development. And then because the whole point of developing a new antibiotic is so that you have a last line of defense for when when the next mutation occurs and resistance in the currently widely used drugs, only then would your drug be used. So this means that you're developing a drug whose purpose is not to be widely applied to a current disease, but to sit on the shelf and hopefully never be used.
Mm-hmm.
So this combination means that there is very little money to be made in developing new antibiotics. And because our whole model for pharmaceutical development is based on, you'll get the patent and you will make money off of it, and that's how you're going to pay for your research. That means that there's not a lot of research being done in the space. And even when there are some that are like initial stages, the amount of money to get through the clinical trials into approval process is so big that a lot of things are just sort of sitting in the, well, maybe that would work, but we don't know yet pile. And so when reading this article or similar articles that are calling for, oh, we need new classes of antibiotics, it's like, okay, yes, well, we all know that, but what do we do? And there are some like, well, maybe we need to rethink the model of how we compensate for them. So like some places are saying, well, we'll make a prize. We'll make like $1 billion prize. If you get a new antibiotic class into the market, then you get $1 billion. And obviously, this has to be funded by multiple countries. That would be enough incentive to cover R&D for something. And maybe we'll see some incentive there. You also see pushback on that kind of thing, though, because it's like, well, I don't want to give a pharmaceutical company $1 billion. there's again, layers and layers of complication always. But I think it's pretty clear that our current model is not meeting the demand that we have. Mm-hmm. And this article is just more evidence of that.
Right.
So we have to do something, whether it's a prize or something else. We'll have to figure that out, but we need to figure it out soon. And maybe we just gotta not let the perfect be the enemy of the good.